Well, my name is Réal Lafrenière. I'm from the province of Manitoba, and I work for the province of Manitoba's Department of Agriculture Rural Initiatives. I'm going to be talking about the rural and extension responsibilities of apiculture and how they've been changing over time from some inside influences and some outside influences, where we're finding that the regulatory side is diminishing and it's being replaced by extension. And there's some areas where that's satisfactory and other areas that's very dangerous. So that's why I called it black and white and gray. And in some areas this gray could be very beneficial, and other places it's going to be very detrimental. Just to cover a little bit about the honeybee regulations. The honeybee regulations date back a very, very long time. There's honeybee regulations that have go back to the early 1900s. I saw some of the Dominion apiarists reports. They already had very extensive inspection programs dating back to 1919. So these dates, these programs have been around there for a very, very long time. The purpose of the legislation is to control the spread of disease, and it really is no different from way back then than it is right now. It's still very, very poignant. In fact, it's probably more important now than it was back then. They were really dealing with a very small number of diseases. Over the last 20 years, we've seen dramatic changes in diseases. So we're heading down a path that I think needs to be red flagged fairly soon. There are international regulations that control, you know, the movement of bees inside the country that helps to control diseases coming in. But we also have regulations that help to control the diseases within the provinces, and I believe in the states would be very, very similar, where it controls the migration or the movement of bees within the province, but also between provinces. There is a lot of movement between provinces. Not to the degree of migratory beekeeping there is in the US, but there is sales of bees, and there is movement towards pollination as well too. In terms of the Bee Act has not changed very much over time. It's still basically a list of regulatory diseases. Some we regulate very heavily, others are just listed there just in case we have to regulate them before, because there's changes that happen to them, either a resistance development, that we can allow ourselves to get control over those situations. A lot of it has to do with keeping very good disease histories on the beekeeping operations in the jurisdiction. So it requires a mandatory registration of the beekeepers, and in many cases the beekeepers' apiary sites as well too. So there's a very, very detailed database of who's in the business, and with inspection programs there's a good history of the disease in that operation when they're trying to sell or move bees. So part of the Bee Act is also to control the movement of bees and equipment, so that equipment isn't sold without some kind of risk assessment with it. It's not a guarantee, because many of the programs, inspection programs, are a sampling of the disease situation in the jurisdiction. But it still is, when you have numbers of years of inspections, it is a very good risk assessment. The Bee Act also includes penalties. If people are non-compliant with the Bee Act, this is a regulation that has teeth. It's not just extension, it has legislation that can enforce compliance, it could revoke registrations, and it has monetary penalties as well too. Many of the monetary penalties are very, very minor, and most of the compliance within the Bee Act has been very, very, it has happened very, very well with the beekeepers. They realize the program has benefit for the greater good, so compliance as a whole has been fairly good. So with that said, if we did have to replace some regulatory with extension, just because of the compliance that we've seen with the regulatory side, they probably would support the extension recommendations as well. And in this process, there is also the right to appeal. So that provides the beekeepers that are this program is, or this regulation is being administered to them, that it has to be consistent. If they disagree with what's going on, if there's a lot of inconsistencies, they have an option to appeal. So part of these programs require the kind of long-term foreseeing and trying to keep everything as standard and uniform as possible. You can't be changing on the fly where you regulate one person one year and the next year, because of changes, you automatically stop regulating. You put that person in the previous year potentially in an economic situation where if they would have just been caught the year after, there would have been no consequences for them. In terms of extension responsibilities, very similar to the regulatory side, the extension responsibilities, especially when I look at myself as a provincial apiarist, have been pretty consistent all the way through. The demand for extension is quite strong in beekeeping, but a lot of it is very similar to trying to introduce new people into beekeeping. There's a very important extension side in beekeeping. So we're not just regulators, we have to still maintain that extension side as well too. To teach beekeepers, the new beekeepers, the fundamentals about beekeeping, to teach them the biology so that they're better equipped to deal with issues that might come up in the area of regulation, like diseases. We're also very part of the campaign or the awareness for the benefits of pollination and pollinators, and also to understand that relationship between the pollinator and the plants. We also have a very key role in the commercialization of beekeeping. Beekeeping is an agricultural, you know, business, but a lot of beekeepers are start off as hobby beekeepers. And hobby beekeeping has the same fundamentals when you're dealing with the bees as a commercial operation, but then there's this change in mindset when you're dealing with commercial operations. You have to think beyond the hive. You got to think at the apiary level. So there is quite a change in philosophy of how you do things. So the extension program is really important to take those people that have the wherewithal. You know, they're very good beekeepers, but they got to go to that commercial level. Areas that have developed more recently and are very important as part of our extension programs now are genetics breeding. There's a lot more interest in these areas. How to identify the traits that you want, all the characteristics, what is inheritable traits. So there's a lot of work towards that area as well too. Another big area is the awareness of insecticides and their impact on bees. A lot of extension material to beekeepers, but more so to the general public about how to protect pollinators, what needs to be done in order to try to avoid these situations. Up in Canada, we have a pretty severe winter, so a lot of extension goes into how to prepare colonies for winter, especially for the new beekeepers, but also, again, those smaller beekeepers that are going to the next level of commercialization. There's a lot of engineering that has gone on into developing wintering rooms and what is needed for to winter large numbers of colonies in an indoor building. So there's a lot of extension material that goes out on wintering. Lots of work has been done on cost of productions as well. And one area that I want to say has changed the most over the last little while has been disease control. If you looked, you know, 30 years ago, the disease extension was pretty minor. It was the same disease, and it was pretty, hadn't changed very much, and it was just the same, you know, it was in the can. Whereas now, that has become probably the lion's share of our extension program, is that how to deal with all these new diseases. And again, a lot of them, we can deal with them with the extension, but we're also having to back that up with regulations. Who is responsible for extension? There are mainly three bodies that are involved with extension. There's the government, there's the universities, and then there's these professional associations. The government at the federal level and the provincial level also deal with regulatory. The federal level, as mentioned earlier, deals with kind of international trade. And many of the people that are involved in that regulation are not involved in extension at all. Whereas at the provincial level, they're involved with the extension, the regulation, in some cases even research. University is more or less, at least in Canada, research. but then provide some extension on the side. So it's more of a secondary thing than a primary. And the professional associations like the Apiary Inspectors of America, the Canadian Association of Professional Apiculturists, and the American Association of Professional Apiculturists are associations of people that are involved in apiculture at the research, at the extension, at the regulatory side. So it's a way of coming together to try to develop programs that are going to be used for the beekeeping community. Generally not involved in regulatory, but often are consulted on regulatory issues. So there are a very important part with regulations as well, too. In terms of the impact or the mixing of regulatory and extension responsibilities, over the history of apiculture, there's always been good times and bad times. And so when you go into these bad times, that there's these sudden changes where there is a potential of something that you were doing before becomes now a regulation just to protect the industry, or vice versa, where you may have been regulating and just because now it's become more commonplace, you kind of back off the regulation and you just deal with it on the extension side. But probably no more poignant than the last 20 years in apiculture has there been such a dramatic change. Perhaps in the area when they were developing these regulations, or in area in times of really big changes, new developments in treatments, there could have been some significant changes, or even war times. But the last 20 years have seen a dramatic change in the disease profiles in not only Canada, but all over the world. The 1980s will definitely be remembered as the year that, or the decade that parasitic mites came to North America. They came in around the mid to late 1980s, and the impact was already quite devastating at that point. The foreshadowing of what the potential impact could be created a situation, at least in Canada, where the mite wasn't there. It came into the United States first. So an embargo on packaged bees and queens was set up to try to protect the industry. So there was a border closure of movement of bees into Canada. And this was not a simple task. This was an arduous task. Many people thought very hard about the negative impact that could have. And it really divided the industry. And it was something that, again, if you're going to divide the industry, then next year you can't say, well, let's open the border again. You can't make those type of decisions. It's got to be long-term type of decisions. You need regulatory. You can't be doing that on extension. It also involved the eradication of colonies. And for the same reason, you can't be eradicating colonies one year and all of a sudden decide that the next year you're going to stop. So there's got to be this long-term commitment. And and with regulations, you have that binding, you know, power to be able to fulfill those, you know, what you were trying to accomplish. It also involved a lot of intensive monitoring that took away from other programs. Many of the inspection programs were set up to collect a lot of information on American foul brood and other important diseases. But when these varroa mite and honeybee trachea mite came in, they displaced everything. Everything basically got turned upside down. So in many cases, with limited budgets, you downsized a lot of those other programs, and you know, consequences were going to be dealt with when they came about. It certainly refocused the resources in those programs, but it also generated a lot of opportunity for extension. There was a lot of talk at the time for, you know, being a little more self-sufficient, and when you close the border like that, you have no choices. So it did force that, but a lot of that force was well supported with extension. You know, the provincial apiculturists, as well as that those professional organizations, worked very, very hard to provide, you know, extension packages to help deal with those issues. How to transfer these people that were not used to wintering bees, how to winter bees. So that knowledge was passed on. They also became more self-sufficient in their own queen production. The 1990s were another challenge, a slightly different challenge. This would have been more regarded as an era of erosion of government programs. This is where I was talking about outside influences. We were having enough trouble struggling with the internal ones when we developed mite problems and all these other things, but now having to ramp up our programs, but now given less money. So you had to do more with less. Unfortunately, the parasitic mites became a little more endemic, and it's one of those things where once they become endemic, you continue to regulate them at the same level you did before. So we did see a change, and the change was involving the dropping of eradication and just dealing with trying to control populations, trying to provide good disease control. It created a bit of a gray area, and I think this is one of the gray areas where gray areas are fine, but they can only be a transition period. You can't develop an entire program in a gray area. So we went from regulating very, very heavily to still monitoring at a very high level, and but making recommendations of how to deal with that issue. But given the fact that we were putting enough investment in monitoring on a regular basis, it was quite easy to sway them to say that these levels are getting very, very high. And at the same time, there was a lot of work, research being done to support this with regard to developing economic thresholds and trying to instill the IPM principles. Unfortunately, when the mites came on, they were a very economic and very serious threat, but there were treatments that were very, very effective. And I think the adoption of IPM was slowed down a little bit just by the actual success of the acaricide used to control these. You could almost guarantee control. So it did not put the pressure on having to try new things. So it did provide a bit of that transition. I just think that transition might have lasted a little too long. And in the 2000s, we did continue to see other struggles. This will be, I categorize this as multiple stress impact. We just see stresses from all sides coming at us. We're still dealing with budget cuts, scaling backs of programs. Many of the provinces had two people working in apiculture as specialists. Maybe one was more on the regulatory side and the other one was more on the extension, but many of that just got gobbled up and there was only one person left. Many of the actual inspection programs were scaled back to the point where some of them were dropped completely. They were only in response to dealing with if somebody wanted to move bees from one province to the next, they have to have that inspection. They would only offer inspection at that time. So they were really, really scaled back. During this time, we saw challenges again with the problems or the pests that we had. We saw the development of resistance, not only in an economic disease like American foul brood, but we also had resistance of the treatments to control varroa mite. We had that very, very successful treatment, and when we lost it, it was a strong impact on the industry, and its replacement was lost within a couple years after that. So it was very, very challenging at that time. At that point, with the cutbacks and how widespread the problems had become, the regulations had to be pulled back a little bit again. They were dropped from what I consider disease control towards disease management. We heard a talk earlier today about just getting enough control to pushing it down. Maybe sometimes not even much below economic threshold, but instead of using IPM strategies to deal with it, you're just pushing it down to get to the next treatment period. So we're just trying to stay ahead of the curve. This was also the time when we heard that beautiful phrase, colony collapse disorder. The impact, again, still unknown how widespread and how long it's going to last, but it certainly emphasized the vulnerability of colonies to multiple stresses, because we, at this point in time, I heard a talk earlier today, they still haven't been able to pinpoint this. So it's hard to build extension programs around something that you don't even know. So again, under those circumstances, you know, if we were able to protect ourselves with regulation, it would be something that we should be looking at. In terms of asking the question, are regulatory and extension responsibilities in apiculture black and white and gray? I would say that they're all of the above. But we have seen an increase in the amount of gray area that's occurring in the industry, and it still disturbs me a little bit. I think the vulnerability of maintaining large areas where we used to regulate and now we're just going to rely on extension is a vulnerability for the industry, especially during these times where we're dealing with problems that we don't really understand. We're always going to see the greatest, you know, impact on this transition from regulation to extension during times of change. And I don't believe the times of change have gone. I think we're I don't know if it's tip of the iceberg, and maybe I'm pessimistic, but I don't think we're out of the woods yet. There continues to be a need for a strong regulatory power, especially when we're dealing with things that we may not be able to control. They're outside of our limits. And it is very important that if we are going to be using these gray areas, that we become consistent. We treat them not exactly like extension, but we can't treat them like regulations, because if you try treating an extension or recommendation like a regulation, it will be fought and you will lose. So we have to kind of recognize that we can't enforce recommendations. We can make them very attractive, but we're not going to be able to enforce them. We still need that regulatory authority to be able to do that. But I have to admit, this graying area has opened up a few things. It's not all that bad. When we had that very divisive period of time when the border was closed and we regulated very, very hard, we lost a lot of the industry. A lot of the industry just abandoned government. And now that we're talking about regulating a little bit less, really using extension, try to really attract them to doing things, a lot of them are responding much more favorable to that than they are being heavily regulated. So I think it has opened up, it has tested some of the waters that we don't need to hammer down on everything. We just need to hammer down on the stuff that if we don't, it just allows too much vulnerability for the industry. So I kind of thought about this a long time, and I kind of thought about, I guess it's not that bad to have a little bit of gray, and as I get a little older, I guess I have to get used to that as well too. So thank you very much.